Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Dr. Ben Edwards with Veritas Medical. Of course, Veritas Medical, check out the website. At veritasmedical.com, you can also listen to past archived programs, find additional information at the website, veritasmedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I had a great weekend. Hope you did as well.
I did. Plenty of rest and sunshine.
Yeah, that's all good.
It's the great outdoors.
So what's going on this week on the program? By the way, if you have a question throughout the program, you can certainly do that. 806-745-5800, 806-745-5800. I think last week we had some internet problems or something because of the weather, and we had, but we're all good now. So if you have a question along the way, feel free to do that. So we have a special guest as well on the show.
Yes, sir. I'm excited to have Barbara Lowe Fisher with us today to bring some insights and to educate the audience. I try to remind all my patients that the Latin root of physician is teacher, and our job as physicians really is to teach people how to steward their health, teach them how to give the body what it needs and how to avoid what it doesn't need. And if you can do those two things, the body should function like it's supposed to. It's amazingly designed, but it needs to be stewarded the right way. Unfortunately, we've hit the easy button answer many times, and more from the probably scientific standpoint. We think we can hijack or bypass or subvert or somehow get around some natural laws that God put into creation. And that causes problems, unintended consequences, we like to say. So we're going to continue today with our education of our listeners, and of course my patients, but all the listeners out there, with the goal of not needing a doctor. And if you, I truly believe if you can give the body what it needs through the Veritas four pillars of health, nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace, then the body can be well. But that kind of assumes that you're educating yourself and that you are avoiding the things that could undermine your basic physiology. So today I'm so happy to have Barbara Lowe Fisher here to help educate patients and listeners on some of the things we might need to avoid or possibly maybe we can do in regards to vaccination. It's a hot topic right now. We've talked about it many times in the past with lots of different guests, but I believe Barbara brings a perspective, especially from an education standpoint, that's very needed. So quickly, before we bring Barbara Lowe Fisher in, a quick bio. She's a co-founder and president of the National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org is the website. And this is a nonprofit charity she founded with parents of vaccine-injured children in 1982. She founded this in order to try to help prevent vaccine injuries and deaths through public education. And for the past four decades, she has led a national grassroots movement and public information campaign to institute vaccine safety and inform consent, protections, and public health policies and laws. She has researched, analyzed, and publicly articulated the science, policy, law, ethics, and politics of vaccination to become one of the world's leading non-medical consumer advocacy experts on vaccination and human rights. She has co-authored and authored numerous books. Of course, the website is amazing. Again, that's NVIC.org. That stands for National Vaccine Information Center. Miss Barbara Lowe Fisher, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Dr. Ben.
Well, you're very welcome. And I want to jump right in because we have a lot to cover. And I always like to start the top of these shows where we talk about vaccines with just a brief kind of admission that I'm a human being too, so if there's some way to make something easier and kind of hit an easy button answer, of course, human nature is you want to do that. So if there was a way to introduce a safe and effective little piece of coronavirus or flu virus or whatever virus and bacteria you want to choose, you know, chop that little bug up, put it in some sterile water, inject it into my arm, introduce it into my body so the immune system can get an early sneak peek at it and build some antibodies to it, and be ready for if a big big wave of that coronavirus hit me in the face one day, if someone coughed in my face, and my body would be ready for it and be ready to fight it quickly. You know, that sounds great, and it would be great if there was a way to do a safe and effective way to do that. So I'm all for that if there's a proven way to do that safely and effectively. So I just want to say that at the outset. However, knowing what I know now after 8 years of integrative medicine, I very much have my doubts or suspicions when mankind, man and human beings in general, come along with some scheme to try to improve upon God's amazing design. You know, I have to pause and look at that a lot closer, analyze that, scrutinize that a lot closer, and not just make some assumptions and not just listen to the typical media sources. And unfortunately, including my medical school curriculum and professors, because they didn't teach me anything like what Barbara Lowe Fisher has taught me and can teach y'all through her website and through interviews like this. So that was a little caveat, Barbara, before we jump in. And I know we got a lot of ground to cover, but I like my listeners to know kind of your background a little bit, where you're coming from, how you got to where you are today, you know, to give them some perspective on just you and how you're coming to some of your conclusions. So can you give us some of your background?
Sure. And I appreciate your introductory statements, because NVIC's mission is to prevent vaccine injuries and deaths through public education and to secure and defend informed consent protections in vaccine policies and laws. But we do not make vaccine use recommendations. We support your right to be fully informed about the risks and complications of infectious diseases and vaccines, and the legal right to make voluntary vaccination decisions without being punished for the decision you make. So we certainly support all healthcare options. And for those people who want to use vaccines and want to use all the vaccines that the government recommends, that is certainly their choice. But we do defend the right for everyone to make an informed choice. But the reason I got involved in this was, I didn't plan to do this for my life. But my first child, my son Chris, was born in 1978. And as a baby, he was really the brightest of my three children. He was saying words at 7 months, speaking in full sentences by the age of two. He was this happy, healthy, cheerful little boy until he got his fourth DPT shot at the age of 2.5. In 1980, and within hours of that shot, I witnessed what I now know, but didn't know then, was a convulsion, collapse shock, and state of unconsciousness that lasted for hours as he lay in his bed without moving. And I thought he was coming down with something or just taking a really long nap, but what was really happening was he was suffering a classic post-DPT encephalopathy, and that day changed his life and my life forever, really. After the shot, he regressed physically, mentally, and emotionally. He became a totally different child. He no longer knew the alphabet, or he couldn't count out to 20 anymore. He used to do that. He couldn't identify words in the books we read every day together. He couldn't concentrate for more than a few seconds at a time. He developed new food allergies. He was constantly sick with ear and respiratory infections and diarrhea that left him severely underweight. Emotionally fragile, frustrated, angry when he couldn't do what he could do before. My family and I, we couldn't figure out what had happened to him, and the pediatricians told me it was just a stage he was going through and not to worry about it. But Chris never returned to the child he was before that shot, and by age six, he was diagnosed with multiple learning disabilities so severe he had to stay in a special education classroom throughout his public school education. So it was about 18 months after his reaction in the spring of 1982, that I watched the Emmy Award-winning documentary DPT Vaccine Roulette, which had been produced by the NBC station in Washington, D.C. And when I saw those children on that TV screen, a little black and white TV in my kitchen, they were much more severely injured than Chris. But I knew instinctively I needed to find out more. And I went down to the station. I asked for copies of the medical literature that was used to anchor the evidence presented in the program. And I was put in touch with other parents in the area. And we co-founded the nonprofit charity at that time known as Dissatisfied Parents Together, or DPT, but now is known as NVIC. And, bottom line, Chris and I, he is a videographer. He is able to function in society. We know how fortunate he was not to have been more severely injured. He's had to compensate for his learning disabilities all his life. But we know so many families whose children will never be able to live on their own, never be able to function, and will always be dependent upon someone to help them live. So that's one of the reasons I've continued to do this work for 38 years is I want fewer parents to have to watch their children suffer from a vaccine reaction.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a moving story, and I'm sorry to hear about Chris, but what a amazing journey it's been for him to be where he is today and doing what he is with his videography work. That's awesome, and I know there's a lot of families who, like you said, their children were injured more severely and are non-functional. And that's part of the reason we're doing this show, obviously. And that's similar to my experience. I was fully vaccinated my first kiddos and supported, didn't know any different. Obviously went to medical school and was taught, these vaccines are great and here's the schedule and get it done. I never read a vaccine package insert. I never knew the potential risk. I never gave true informed consent because I wasn't educated on really how to do that. It was just stick to the schedule and get it done and get them caught up when they got behind and et cetera. Once I moved into the integrative medical realm, I started having moms come to my clinic with children, and they would tell me stories just like what you told me with their kiddos that were developing normally along the Denver developmental screening was normal or advanced, and then a direct relationship timing-wise to vaccine injury. So I want to go back to that DPT, and from that point, at that point, I imagine you were just focused on DPT and trying to get people educated on potential risk of that. How did it evolve into more than that?
Well, after we established our organization, we were in the Washington, D.C. area. We asked for congressional hearings into the risks of DPT vaccine because we wanted a safer pertussis vaccine. At that time, Japan was using an acellular, a split cell vaccine that was far less reactive. We knew that we could have had a better vaccine here, and that was our goal, is to get the old DPT vaccine off the market and a better vaccine in. Now, there was a lot of pushback, of course, by the government, by the medical trade associations, and certainly by the manufacturers who said, we're furious about this program and this new awareness because it was the first time that American parents had really been told that vaccines could brain damage children. There was no information back in 82 for parents.
Right.
So the DPT vaccine manufacturers were being sued, and they were threatening to stop producing vaccines if Congress did not give them liability protection from lawsuits. And because they said, look, if these vaccines are federally licensed and recommended and state mandated, then we should not have any liability. Because no vaccine, no drug is 100% safe for everyone. Of course, they didn't want to talk about the fact that they could have made that vaccine safer, but they chose not to, which is the evidence is there that they could have made it safer long before in the 70s,
Yeah.
Anyway, Congress came to us and said, look, we're going to pass legislation to protect the vaccine supply. And you can either come to the table and fight for what you think the family should get, or you cannot come to the table, but we are going to pass a law because we have to protect the vaccine supply in this country. So we came to the table, and we did the best we could at the time. And it was a very different time. No personal computers, no cell phones, no internet. And we were coming up against this wealthy, powerful vaccine industry, medical trade, federal agencies determined to deny that vaccine injuries and deaths were real. I mean, they were trying to say, just if it ever happened, it was so rare, it was not statistically relevant, So the upshot is Congress passed the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act in 1986 that established a federal vaccine injury compensation program, which was an administrative compensation system alternative to a vaccine injury lawsuit in civil court against a vaccine manufacturer. That law did not give the vaccine industry full liability protection because we fought to have them still be liable for design defect. That is, if you could show they could have made a vaccine safer, they still were liable in civil court. the doctors also did not get liability protection in that law in 86. Wow. What happened after the law was passed? After the law was passed, very quietly, the medical trade associations came in and they, in 1987, we didn't know it, and they got an amendment into that law that gave the doctors and all vaccine providers liability protection. Then, over the succeeding decade, there was an erosion of that act. The safety provisions we had gotten in, that doctors would have to give parents information, benefit and risk information in writing before vaccination took place, that they would have to write down in the medical record whenever there was an adverse event after vaccination. They would have to report to the vaccine adverse event reporting system, which was created under that law, that they there was also a duty to make vaccines safer, language in that law, and research provisions in the law. But all of that was gutted by the same, actually, the same people, the legislators that supported the law came in after the law was passed and worked with the agencies, and it was gutted. So the law that is in place today is very different from the law that was passed in 86. And basically today, in 2011, the U.S. Supreme Court declared that vaccines are unavoidably unsafe and that they shielded the companies from all liability, even design defect. So as of 2011, there basically is no liability in this country. If you are injured by a vaccine and your child dies from a vaccine, you have to go into the federal compensation system, and they turn 2 out of 3 people away now in that system. Even though $4 billion has been paid out since 1990, 2 out of 3 people are turned away with no compensation, because the Department of Justice and the Department of Health and Human Services fight almost every claim. Why do they fight every claim? Because, well, first of all, there's no liability, so there's no incentive for them to award compensation. And it's also that they don't want to admit that vaccines can cause harm, so they try to fight every claim. So it's unfortunate today that there is no liability across the board for anybody involved in the vaccination process. This is why our organization says it makes the ethical principle of informed consent to medical risk-taking, or vaccine risk-taking in this case, even more important. It means that these laws in the states that require vaccination must contain exemptions. That is, flexible medical, religious, and conscientious belief exemptions, because it's the only way that the people have to put leverage on the system to function better and for these companies to make safer vaccines, since there is no liability.
Okay, so let me summarize, because that's a lot of information for especially listeners that are brand new to this whole topic. So basically what you're saying is the DPT shot could have been done more safely. Yeah. It was being done more safely in Japan. They refused to do that, and lawsuits were starting to emerge. And so the vaccine companies came to Congress to say, hey, we're going to quit making them unless you protect us. They passed a law to protect them that did have some balance in that law initially, but it got gutted to now there's zero balance at all. And the point I really want to drive home, you said 2 out of 3 people that bring their injured child, or I guess it could be adult too, but if you feel like you were injured from a vaccine and you bring it to this, we call it vaccine court, the slang for that, I guess, but it's not even a court, it's just this administrative system in the government. 2 out of 3 of those are denied. The Justice Department fights it and they say, no, you don't get compensated. I mean, that's just, and let me say this from a medical doctor standpoint. Of course, I didn't even know about this compensation program. Medical school didn't teach me. Residency didn't teach me. I didn't learn about it after I graduated and after I finished my training and was out practicing. I never heard about it during any continuing medical education. I mean, I was chief resident of my class. I was pretty well informed. I was a doctor practicing the cutting edge, latest, greatest, highly trained UT Houston, MD Anderson, Herman Hospital. And I didn't know anything about this vaccine compensation process, nor did I know to report. I didn't know how to identify. I wasn't trained how to identify a vaccine injury or a potential vaccine injury, nor was I educated and trained on how to report that. to this system. So knowing that, it makes me thinking back, man, I probably missed a few, but not just me, all of my colleagues, everyone I trained with, and probably most doctors around the country. So I've heard various estimates, but what's your thought on what percentage of potential vaccine injuries even get reported? And we already know 2/3 are denied, but what percent do you think even get reported to this system?
Well, the vaccine adverse event reporting system that was created under this law, at our insistence, we said that you have to centralize these vaccine injury reports. This system, we know, because there was a study done by Harvard Pilgrim, and they looked at the reporting rate for VAERS, and they said less than 1% of adverse events following vaccination are reported to the vaccine adverse event reporting system. And this, I think, was in 2011 when they looked at it. Mm-hmm. And so you have the vast majority of events that poor health outcomes that occur after vaccination are not being reported. And they're not, the research provisions in that law have not been implemented properly. They've not done the research that they were supposed to do to look at my issue that I've been so concerned about. Is we know there, the Institute of Medicine has acknowledged, the National Academy of Sciences, over a period of 20 years, they issued reports on vaccine safety issues. Those reports were actually mandated under the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. And they acknowledge that there are huge gaps in the science about vaccine safety. They're just, the studies are not being done. And they acknowledge that there are genetic and environmental and biological predisposition, individual susceptibility to having a vaccine reaction that ends with a permanent, you know, injury or death. But the problem is that there are no screening tools. So doctors are handicapped because the science is not being done. Doctors like you and others are not able to properly screen children. And so in a way, DPT Vaccine Roulette, that title of that Emmy Award-winning show, is very apt, because we're taking this risk when we present for vaccination. The doctors don't have the tools they need to screen out children. And they're not giving any incentive, because they're told by the government that basically these events are so rare, right, that it's not worth, you know, thinking about. So this one-size-fits-all approach is taken when we're not all the same genetically or epigenetically or environmentally. Mm-hmm. We're all different, and it's really punishing in a way the people who are born with genes or have epigenetic histories that make them more susceptible to having a vaccine reaction. They're being viewed as necessary sacrifices to implement the program, and I don't think most doctors stop to think about this.
Right.
They've just been taught in medical school that it's so rare and it's for the greater good.
Yeah.
But if you don't know how many are being sacrificed for the policy,
yeah,
I don't know if you can say that, really, right, that it's for the greater good.
I agree 100%. Barbara, we've got a caller real quick. Caller, go ahead with your question.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking for the number of that brand Source Radio Lab.
Oh.
I mean the address.
Scratch that.
I'll get that for you in just a minute, sir. But go ahead, Barbara.
All right.
Or is this a good time to take a break?
Well, I want to say one thing, though, to follow up on what Barbara,
okay,
was just saying, or to reiterate. Barbara, you said $4 billion paid out through that program, compensation program?
Right, but it really should be far more than that, because two,
right,
out of three are turned away. Yes, $4 billion since 1990.
And two out of three are turned away, but still we've, mm-hmm, paid out $4 billion for vaccine injury.
Mm-hmm.
But less than 1%, according to that Harvard study, even get reported.
Correct.
This would be absolutely bankrupting I guess we just print more money, though, bankrupting the government. Where does this $4 billion come from? The taxpayer, I'm assuming?
Oh, well, what it comes from is a surcharge on the vaccines that you get. So the companies don't put anything out. It's a surcharge on the vaccines. And that pays into the treasury that holds this compensation fund that is put in trust. Yeah. So that they can draw from it whenever they give an award. So there's all this incentive not to make awards.
Right. Wow. Okay. Well, we're up against that break, Barbara. When we come back, we'll talk some about, you mentioned this, different legislative things from different states. I know Colorado in particular is on my radar. My sister-in-law lives there, and some interesting stuff just happened recently with the Colorado legislature. So we'll talk about that when we get back. And also maybe we'll get into, you know, because I'll have people tell me, well, these are deadly diseases. So, and that's fine. We can consider that. And I think what Barbara's point just now was, let's take coronavirus. What if coronavirus is going to kill, you know, 100,000 people and a vaccine would save those 100,000? That would be awesome. Let's do it. What if the vaccine, though, only saved 50,000 but killed 200,000? You know, you got to. That's what we're talking about here. How much injury, how much death, how much unintended consequences will there be? And then you got to weigh that out, risk benefit. As with any medical procedure, if you're going to get your knee replaced, you're going to want to know what percentage of people that go through this knee replacement die from a blood clot after the operation, or how many people get an infection and die from that, or in the hospital for 6 months fighting that infection, or how many people don't improve in their pain with their knee. You want to know all the statistics so you can make an informed decision on doing this medical procedure. That's all we're talking about here, is let's get information and data and as accurate as possible to decide. Because I've got a healthy kiddo here who's 2 years old and talking in complete sentences and has no medical problems, and I'm going to do a medical procedure to this healthy person. I sure need to know risk versus benefit so I can make an informed decision. So that's what we're talking about. We are with Barbara Lowe Fisher, National Vaccine Information Center, a great source of information and a place to educate yourself on all things vaccine and policy and informed consent. N is in Nancy, VIC.org is the website. And I'm Ben Edwards. This is You're the Cure. We will be right back. Stick with us.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. You can go to the website, check out past archived programs, veritasmedical.com. Also find important information at Veritas Medical about our practice. Love to help you out, veritasmedical.com. We'll turn it back to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. And again, if you have a question along the way, feel free to call in or text at 806-745-5800.
All right. Thank you, Wade. We are back with Barbara Lowe Fisher, co-founder and president of the National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org. I encourage everybody to go there. Encourage your family, especially family that's having babies or has kids, to go there and get educated and support that website and support what Barbara Lowe's doing. We, so many beautiful kids out there, and the vaccine injury rates, unfortunately, not only the injury rates, I believe, are climbing, but for sure disease rates. I mean, that's clear. And whether it's neurological issues like ADD and ADHD and dyslexia and depression and schizophrenia and, of course, autism and the whole autism spectrum, but autoimmune disorders, chronic disease in general, 52 to 54% of kids have a chronic disease. And as I heard, I forget his name, he's the district attorney, or was, and maybe still is, down in San Antonio. His child was injured from a vaccine, and he's an attorney. And he said, in my world, correlation doesn't mean you convict. It doesn't mean it caused it, but correlation sure means pause and start to investigate, and investigate aggressively. And that's what we should be doing when we are the sickest industrialized country. Our kids die more than any other country from an infant mortality rate standpoint. Our kids are the sickest compared to any other country. Bobby Kennedy's just put out on his website some stuff on vaccinated versus unvaccinated studies showing clearly unvaccinated children are more healthy overall. So just there's so much corollary and circumstantial evidence, but there's also hardcore evidence, scientific stuff. And I don't know that we have time to get into all that, although, Barbara, I'll let you speak to that. I do want to talk about, though, before we get into anything else, what you mentioned on the state level, that your organization can inform people all over the country, regardless of what state you live in, can inform you as to what is going on at the state capitol, as in Colorado. The House just recently passed a mandatory vaccine legislation. It has not gone through the Senate and the governor, so it's not law yet, but it passed one big hurdle. So can you speak to that Colorado legislation and just what your organization does in general to keep people informed so that they can fight back if they feel like they need to do that?
Right. In 2010, we launched the NVIC Advocacy Portal at nvicadvocacy.org, and it's free. It's a public service. And what we do in that portal is we users are able to get in their email box when a vaccine-related bill is being proposed in their state to either restrict or expand the legal right to make voluntary vaccine decisions. And so if you sign up, you are able to get only your state information. You don't get everybody else's information, but what pertains to you and your state, and you're electronically connected with your own legislators at both the state and federal level, because we also monitor federal vaccine-related legislation. After 2011, when the U.S. Supreme Court declared vaccines to be unavoidably unsafe and removed all remaining liability for vaccine manufacturers, this is when the vaccine lobby, the forced vaccination lobby, started to go into action and started to go into the states to try to take vaccine exemptions away. And in 2015, they had their first success in California when they removed the religious and conscience exemption, leaving only a very narrow medical exemption in the state of California. That year, they also took the philosophical exemption away from Vermont. So we really have been on the ground, especially since 2015, fighting to retain exemptions in the states. And in this country, we have three types: medical, but that's so narrow now because the federal government considers almost no health condition to be a reason not to vaccinate. So a very narrow medical exemption. And then you have religious, which is in most states, but not all at this point. And you have the conscience or personal belief exemption, which is in about 13 states, I think, at this point. So we're on the ground trying to educate people about how to go into their state legislatures, create personal relationships with their elected representatives, and try to educate them about protecting these exemptions. We were able to hold the line after 2015 until 2019 and 2020, when we have seen a number of states take away exemptions. And you mentioned Colorado. That is the latest state to restrict. They basically eliminated the religious and personal belief exemption and lumped it into what they call a non-medical exemption. You're going to have an education module that's created by the state if you want to take a non-medical exemption in Colorado, unless you can find a doctor to sign off on this non-medical exemption, which I guarantee you, you're not going to be able to find many doctors who will do that. You also are automatically entered into the state tracking system, the vaccine tracking system, which has been, they've been creating vaccine tracking, electronic tracking systems since the early 1990s, and we've constantly opposed those because we know that once you're electronically tracked, then you, in the future, you could be punished for not getting all of the vaccines because they have you identified and tracked. So at this point, California has only a narrow medical. New York last year eliminated religious. They only have a very narrow medical exemption left. You have Virginia that just this year passed a law which I believe is a threat to every state. They set the precedent in Virginia that from now on, every federally recommended vaccine that's recommended by the CDC will be automatically added to the required list for Virginia school children. The Board of Health can take a look at it, but basically what they're doing is codifying into state law federal vaccine recommendations, which are made by an unelected committee appointed by the CDC called the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. I believe this is what they want in every state. They want to have automatically make every vaccine recommended by the CDC, including the certainly what will be a recommended vaccine, the new COVID-19 vaccine, when that is licensed, added to the federally recommended list for all children. So we're really, right now, we're in the fight for our lives here in this country in terms of being able to make voluntary vaccine decisions. Mm-hmm. And as these laws become more and more oppressive. So I would urge everyone to sign up for the MVIC advocacy portal. Like I say, it's free. It keeps you informed about what is moving in your state and what's moving at the federal level so that you can contact your elected representatives and make your voice heard.
And I encourage everybody to do the same thing. They won't hear you if you don't speak up, and we need to. Again, this is for the purpose of maintaining our liberty and some freedom and choice. If you do your research, which, I mean, we've interviewed Dr. Wakefield and J.B. Hanley and Stephanie Seneff and Brian Hooker and some of these folks, that the research is there. We've interviewed Neil Miller. I mean, and you can find all these on our archive page under the headline or the topic index of vaccines, and we'll add Barbara Lowe's interview to that also. Because once you actually go do your independent research, you see clearly, oh, yeah, this could definitely, this vaccine schedule, the current schedule, and again, I want to remind older listeners, you know, you used to get, you know, three vaccines back in the 1960s or whenever, you know, and that was like to enter kindergarten, not your first shot on day of life one, and then a handful of shots at 2, 4, and 6 months, and you're at 70-plus vaccines, I think, by 5 years old. I don't have all that memorized. But the point is the number, the onslaught, and really which started after 1986, 87, when the vaccine companies were not liable anymore, you see this huge escalation. Can it cause derangement of the immune system? Can it cause autoantibodies to the thyroid and to other things? The evidence is clear. It's out there. The damage can be done. So to not allow someone to have free choice, you know, it's the same thing. This weekend I was flying. Everyone's having to wear a mask to fly. And, of course, my understanding and from my own belief system, but then also the research. Go out there and look. The masks don't work. They impede oxygen flow, and they obviously impede your exhalations. And it's going to put an increased stress on your system, and stress increases or decreases your immune response. So the whole mask thing, it number one, doesn't work, and then it makes things worse. We saw with the flu shot, the study that came out in January 2020 in Vaccine, the journal Vaccine, the 2018 flu shot increased your risk of getting coronavirus by 36%. So the data's out there. People don't understand it, don't know it. So when you do understand it, you need the freedom to say no, thank you. I believe in nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace, the Veritas Four Pillars. I believe in my body's own immune response. I believe in keeping my health up so that my body can naturally defend itself. And that's the whole point of what Barbara is talking about. We need the ability to say no, thank you. Y'all go do that. If you feel like that's what you need to do and it's going to protect you, great. We'll do what we feel will protect us and our family. And we just want that freedom is all we're talking about here. So, Barbara, you mentioned coronavirus, and I know we can't let that slip by without going into that a little bit. And I think then the point we should probably drive home is education, knowledge can bring some sense of peace when you have some understanding and some knowledge about what this coronavirus really is. What is COVID-19? How infectious is it? How deadly is it? You know, these kind of things. So, can you talk a little bit about, you know, from your perspective, what's your take on this whole COVID-19 situation and how dangerous is this virus really? And because they are ramrodding and trying to get this vaccine through quickly, and then probably, as you said, they'll mandate it. So talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that there's been a lot of fear and anxiety that has been driving policy with regard to COVID-19. There are questions, big questions, to be asked about some of the failures of the public health system in responding to COVID-19. You know, why didn't they screen people at seaports and airports for illness as soon as the outbreak was identified in China and got worse in February, so people could be tested and quarantined if they were sick? Why were Americans told to wear masks, told that masks were useless at the beginning of the pandemic and to stop buying and wearing them, and then now we're told we have to wear masks whenever we go outside or even or at work indoors? Why were the emergency supply warehouses completely empty? The pandemic preparedness equipment for healthcare workers was not there. That should have been there. There's been billions of dollars given to federal agencies to prepare for pandemics that involve a respiratory disease, just like coronavirus, and yet there was no equipment. Why did they mix the sick with the healthy in nursing homes where most of the deaths have occurred in these crowded nursing homes, and they were putting sick people with healthy people? I mean, a violation of public health protocol number one. And then, of course, these public health officials persuaded lawmakers to almost immediately lock down and home quarantine most of our population instead of using the traditional control measures that identify, quarantine, and treat the sick. So this has been a very strange response to a virus that now it looks like has far less than 1% mortality rate. Maybe a 0.26% mortality rate, I think, according to the latest CDC figures. this is not in anywhere near the kind of a deadly disease that, for example, smallpox was, with a 30% mortality rate, and yet societies were not shut down. They did not stop functioning like our society has stopped functioning, and we now have millions and millions of people out of work, unemployed. We have hotlines that deal with abused women and children who have been confined to homes with their abusers, skyrocketing cases of abuse. We have so much disruption, people going bankrupt, businesses going bankrupt. The response to the virus has not matched the threat of the virus. And so everybody is very disoriented and confused, and people have been taught to be afraid of each other and not have any physical contact. And I think that there's going to be – I mean, they'll be writing books about this for years to come. But I do know that what they're talking about, the new normal, they're saying we can't go back to normal life until we all get a COVID-19 vaccine. That is basically what they're talking about. So what are they doing with these vaccines? They're fast-tracking them to licensure in a way that we've never, ever seen before. Cutting corners, eliminating animal testing, which is a very important first step to the licensure process for vaccines that usually take 5, 10, or 20 years to get a vaccine licensed because of the evidence that needs to be provided to the FDA for proof of safety and effectiveness. And yet they're talking about bringing out a COVID-19 vaccine this fall for healthcare workers and to have it be available for everybody in 2021. There is no way they're going to have enough evidence to ensure that these vaccines that are using technology, DNA, messenger RNA, nanoparticle, and oil squalene adjuvants, some of these technologies have never been licensed for humans before, and yet they're fast-tracking these COVID-19 vaccines to licensure. I think it's a potential prescription for disaster.
I agree 100%. And just looking historically, we've talked about on previous shows, they've attempted to do coronavirus vaccines in the past, and it hasn't gone well with those animal models. As far as real negative outcomes on the animals, including death. And that's not even getting into, does it work? And we know with the flu vaccine, because that's been around forever, and we've studied it in depth, and the Cochrane Collaboration has put out a lot of independent review of the flu shot. And we know just doing that injection makes you more likely to get non-influenza respiratory infections, i.e. coronavirus. It's not just the study that came out in January that showed a 36% increase. We've known this prior to that, that when you get a flu shot every year, you increase your risk for these non-flu infections. So I would presume and predict that the push is going to start to happen probably pretty soon. We're already halfway through June almost. Get your flu vaccine to protect against coronavirus. I can almost hear the headlines now as I walk through a Walgreens or CVS or my local grocery store. Get your flu shot now. Have you heard that yet, or are you assuming that same thing?
Well, what I've been hearing is they're talking about bringing oral polio vaccine back into this country. The only cause of paralytic polio in the world. They say that maybe the oral polio vaccine could protect against coronavirus. They're talking about TB vaccine protecting against coronavirus, rubella vaccine, and MMR. I mean, everything is on the table, because I do think they realize that even though the target date is less than, 6 to 12 months to get these COVID-19 vaccines out there, I think that they know that there may be more problems with that timeline, and they're trying to figure out what other vaccines they could potentially sell and give to everybody. But the thing I'm most worried about this COVID-19 vaccine is these new technologies that are being used, DNA, messenger RNA, et cetera, are going to ramp up the immune response. That's what they're trying to do. What does that do to those of us who are genetically and epigenetically at high risk for not being able to resolve inflammation in the body? Because what do vaccines do? They create inflammation. They ramp up the inflammatory response in order to produce antibodies. For those of us who can't resolve inflammation, who have severe allergies, who have autoimmunity, this vaccine is going to put us at great risk for an inflammatory response that never gets resolved, mm-hmm. and potentially worsen any type of autoimmune disease or severe allergic disease. So I am very concerned about the high risk people who are already at high risk for having chronic health problems really being at risk with this type of vaccine that they're creating.
Yeah. And what you just said, who are the ones dying from COVID-19 or these high-risk groups already?
That's right.
That have these chronic diseases? And as my longtime listeners know well, that all these chronic diseases, and I'm talking whether it's cancer, heart disease, stroke, Alzheimer's, depression, Google any disease and the word inflammation and you'll see a bunch of hits, because inflammation is a common denominator amongst all these chronic diseases that Americans suffer from. Again, reminding everybody, we are the sickest country in the world. Mm-hmm. Compared to all the industrialized countries, we die the youngest, not just our infants, but also just the overall population. We have more disease and die younger than anyone else. We are a highly inflamed society because mm-hmm. of our standard American diet and lifestyle. And it's an inflammation-based issue, all these diseases. And what Barbara's just saying, if you put a vaccine, especially with these new technologies in that are untested, and ramp up this huge inflammatory response without the ability to rein that in and check that and harness that, these antioxidant enzymes we talk about on the show all the time, if those are not optimized, and they aren't in chronic disease people, and really most Americans, then your chance of an adverse outcome is great. I'll remind everybody of the Hannah Pauling case we've talked about before. She was Dr. Pauling's baby that was vaccine injured, and he was a fellow or a resident or just a junior doctor to Dr. Kelly at Hopkins. And they said the vaccine injured her because she was predisposed. And she was predisposed because she had poor mitochondrial function because of an MTHFR gene mutation. Mm-hmm. These are the kind of things we're talking about. There's ways to screen for. There are ways to look at family history. There's ways to, you could risk stratify these kids or people and decide risk-benefit. It's probably not worth it. But Barbara, I think we got to end on something hopeful, because I could go on and on and on about stuff that'll make you want to pull your hair out. The common sense is just left. Scientific evidence seems to be just corrupted and gone out of our society. Common sense seems to be gone. Fear's driving everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there is hope, because there's people like you who are in the fight for the right reasons. Obviously not just in it for your own personal gain and money, as I would say industry is, to a fault. So people can band together, like minds. That's why we do this show, to educate, but also to help people find a place, a sense of community where they can gather together with like-minded folks and fight the good fight for the future generations. So let's give a little bit of encouragement in our closing minutes, and especially in regards to your organization and how people could get involved and stay informed.
This is a constitutional republic, the United States of America. We democratically elect our representatives who go to our state capitals and the Congress and represent us. They make the laws that govern us. We need to wake up, get out from behind our computer screens, and develop personal relationships with the elected officials, people we elect, because only if you put good people in place who reflect values and beliefs that we all cherish, are we going to get good laws. If you put people in who do not reflect good values and beliefs, they're going to make bad laws. And so the millennials and the Gen Xers have got to start running for office. We have got to replace politicians at the state and federal level who are making bad laws. And certainly there have been a lot of bad vaccine laws that have been made in the last several decades especially. So it means that we can take action. We can, if we get involved and we don't become apathetic or paralyzed by fear. Vet everybody that you vote for in this next election. If you don't like the way your governor has reacted to this COVID-19 pandemic, you don't like the laws that have been put in place that have put you in your homes or ruined your business, you need to make sure you don't vote for people who support that kind of activity. That's the only solution I can think of, which is why I feel so strongly about the MBIC advocacy portal work we do. So it's about getting educated, about standing up and being brave, and I do think we can take back our future in this country, but only if we all take action.
Amen.
So please go to NVIC.org and become educated. Go to NVICAdvocacy.org and sign up for our portal and become an active activist in your community and in your state. And we also have the online weekly journal newspaper, The Vaccine Reaction, at thevaccinereaction.org, that keeps you informed every week of breaking news on vaccine science, policy, law, and ethics. And please sign on to our conference. We have a conference coming up in October 16 through 18, 2020, the 5th International Public Conference on Vaccination, and the theme is Protecting Health and Autonomy in the 21st Century. We have to hold it online because of the travel restrictions that we think are going to be in place in October and the social distancing requirements. But it's going to be an incredible conference with a lot of well-known figures from around the world talking about these issues.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Barbara. Again, we're with Barbara Lowe Fisher. The last thing I do want to say, Barbara, is I was looking through your website over the weekend, and I think we owe it to these kiddos. I saw that you have the International Memorial for Vaccine Victims, because it's easy to just talk about these things and policy and get mad at our legislatures and these corrupt pharmaceutical companies and all that, but there are real injured kids and families that are devastated and children that die. And so there's a memorial that you've set up, this International Memorial for Vaccine Victims, and I can't imagine the struggle these families, number one, to even find out that there's a compensation program, which, again, less than 1% even get reported. And then by the time they find it and find some attorney who even knows about this, I've asked multiple local attorneys here, they were clueless. They were shocked to know there was a system. They didn't even know there's a compensation system. But to find an attorney and go down that road and go through all that painstaking, and then two out of three get denied, So, my heart goes out to these families that have been injured, these kids that have been injured. So thank you for that memorial that you set up. And people can see that on Barbara's website, the National Vaccine Information Center, nvic.org. So thank you, Barbara, for all your work, for your decades of dedication, the time and energy and effort. I know it's not a fun fight sometimes, and probably you don't have a lot of fans sometimes.
I get a lot of criticism, but whatever.
Well, thank you for staying true to your values and for your integrity and for all that you do, and keep up the good fight. I encourage everybody to go to nvic.org and stay informed. So, Barbara, thanks again for joining us. We'll have to have you back someday.
Thank you, Dr. Ben. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. I'm Ben Edwards. This is You're the Cure. Be back next week with another great show.
And you've been listening to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, veritasmedical.com. If you missed the program, you can check it out. It'll be up there soon. And other important information at veritasmedical.com.